Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Bill Newell from MSO News Sports, and we are kind of simulcasting this little event with a podcast on our website, msonewsports.com, as well as Joe Spina's Frankly Speaking, which airs on Lynn TV, and joining us are his team, Paul Crowley and Avran Lapidus. And Joe, welcome. Good to be talking with you again. Joe, you're calling this the Fab Four, the four of us, is that it?
Exactly, of course, yeah. We're the Four Corner Press, you know, that little theme where we, you know, we're provocative, we're enlightening, and we say it like it is.
You got it. We have a lot of topics, but basically they all come under the umbrella of a coronavirus, COVID-19, and so on. But Joe, maybe you could introduce Paul and Avram to our listeners. Joe has been doing North Shore Talk and education on the North Shore for years, and we've done some features with Joe over the years as well on the website. But and Joe's program airs every Thursday live at 5, but because they can't be in the studio, they're on the conference call with us here today. So, Joe, introduce Paul and Avram to our listeners.
Well, Paul is what I consider the pensive pundit. He's very thoughtful, served on the city council for 3 terms, head of GLIS, an entrepreneur, an accountant, and a man of many, many talents. Paul, always a pleasure. How you been doing?
Paul, are you there? Good. I'm here. It's been quite a whirlwind for me dealing with being stuck in the house, but at the same time trying to get a lot of things done. I'm actually managing both, so it's pretty good.
Well, that's great. What about the Jewish kid? Is he there? You know, Avram Lapidus played, right? How's that play going, by the way, Avram?
My boy, Avram? It's been accepted, and 1 year from now, maybe I can make myself a known name. But thank you for bringing it up in the first place, and it's a pleasure to be with you guys because I missed you all terribly, okay?
Well, I want to ask you one thing with Billy's indulgence. Your faith celebrates a very important date this week. Is that not correct?
That starts Wednesday night that lasts for 8 days. It commemorates the time when God took the Jews out of Egypt and marched them along for 40 years in the wilderness and the desert to enter the land of Israel. I want to wish everybody, both Christian and Jews, a very happy Passover, a very happy Easter, and God bless us all, and let's get through what's going on in the world, because it reminds me of the song by Bob Dylan, Times They Are A-Changin'.
Yeah, I thought that was right.
But Avram, your plays are not musicals, though, are they?
This one is going to be one. The music is being done by a man in Poland and a gentleman in England. This one will be a musical. Yes, it will be.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Okay.
It's based on the life of a girl named Wafa Idris, who was a Palestinian. A young girl at the age of 28 years old in 2002 was the first Palestinian suicide bomber.
Well, gentlemen, I just want to point out to our listeners, whether they're watching on Lynn TV or listening here on msonewsports.com, that we're recording this on Tuesday. Normally, without the holidays coming up here this week, we'd be able to do it closer to the air date, which would be Thursday. So, I mean, there's a slight chance that something here could be dated, but I'm thinking maybe not. So, but Joe, let's begin with some of our topics, which would include the reaction from the coronavirus. It seems as if this week we're getting possibly some good news on the bending of the curve in New York State, maybe in Massachusetts, because of the mitigation efforts put forward nationally, federally, as well as in Massachusetts, and a number of different responses. I know we have a graphic with the regarding the beaches being closed or parking to the beaches being closed, but maybe we all can kind of weigh in on some of the mitigation, if you will, that's taken place here in Massachusetts.
Well, to start with, I mean, we're proof positive of it. I mean, we're all in our own individual homes. We're not together. We're not in a studio. We're mitigating and we're distancing as we do this broadcast.
You know, I don't know if I've ever mitigated before.
Well, you have now. Paul, I miss you.
Yeah.
Are you there, Paul?
Certainly, I miss you guys as well. But one of the things I wanted to point out about the mitigation is it seems like there are two viewpoints on the value of the mitigation. For example, I hear this morning that there's, you know, good news, flattening of the curve and things like that, and the stock market is screaming up. The headline in the Boston Globe says that the cases are mounting. You know, they're spinning the stories different ways depending on who their audience is, and it's really frustrating to me. I think that the story
point,
needs
Paul
to
Crowley,
be...
very good point, but let me tell you something. What's going to be the most dangerous thing is when they say, okay, fellas, it's all over, we go back to a normal life, and then all of a sudden, when you least expect it, it's going to come with a force that you can't imagine. This is going to be around. I've talked to a friend of mine who runs the lab at the Brigham and a woman's hospital. Said, Adam, this is going to be around for months.
Well, here's the interesting thing. If you take a look at it nationally, it hasn't hit 10,000. I'm talking about deaths. And I believe it's roughly 300,000 afflicted. I guess the population of 335 million, that's really chump change. And internationally, I believe the number is around 60,000 deaths out of a population of 8 billion. So basically, this has not had a dramatic toll, but it's very contagious, I guess. I mean, how do you frame it? Massachusetts, we've had somewhere in the order of 10,000 confirmed cases and 192 deaths. Today, our population is roughly 6 million. So percentage-wise, ratio-wise, this is not that devastating. Any comment on that?
Well, but hear me out for a second. Let's assume in this country there's 300 million people. How many people have had the test? Very, very, very minor, and even very, very few. If every of the 300 million were able to be tested, there would be millions of people who might have this.
Yes, I understand that, but would it kill them?
Right, but that's the thing. You know, I think everybody's points are very solidly put forth. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, it's kind of like the flu. But because it's so contagious, and because it has, and what I'm starting to realize is that, or maybe it's just the hype in the media, that it's not a very pleasant way to go. You know, there's a lot of that going on. But I look at things, and regarding it's like the flu type stuff. If you think about the numbers that they throw at us, why aren't they throwing at us the numbers of how many people actually died of the regular flu in New York City in the past 3 weeks? Do we get those numbers, or are they just calling them all coronavirus? I mean, I'm not sure that I can trust the media to tell me the truth.
Let me just jump in for a second. I do think, though, that, Joe, to your point, that the numbers may, in the big picture, be small, but the hospitals are overwhelmed, and they are taking incredible precautions, these healthcare providers, so that it doesn't spread and that so that it's not worse. And so, I mean, to me, it seems like the mitigation efforts are a no-brainer that we have to do them because this is not really the flu. It's much different than the flu.
Yeah. I've been hearing over the last 24 hours that the hospitals are not overwhelmed. That was they were anticipating ridiculous numbers of hospital bed needs, and they're just not there. The numbers are off like 75% from what the models were projecting.
Well, let me just jump. I mean, I think the emergency rooms with elevated levels. Now, to bounce to impact an emergency room, but probably in the big picture, doesn't take a ton of cases to do that. But yet, hospitals are emptying out other patients that aren't having the elective surgery at this point. So, but still, I mean, points are well taken. It sounds as if that the hospital that if we got our fingers crossed that, Paul, as you're pointing out, that maybe the hospitals overall are not going to be overwhelmed like we had really feared. In other words, you have Governor Cuomo this week. I think I heard he was turning back the ventilators, some of them.
Right.
Well, I mean, guys. Once you're on a ventilator, you might as well kiss it goodbye. I mean, very few people get off the ventilator and, you know, do the cha-cha. It's almost like a death sentence, or you're almost in hospice once you're on a ventilator. So, I mean, you could make a terrible argument that why bother? You know, what's the big need of ventilators when the outcome is not going to be promising?
Well, you never want to say never. I mean, everybody wants to try to figure out anything they can do to survive. But, you know, I think the bigger question is how on earth was it that New York State was going to need 40,000 ventilators and the federal government was falling asleep at the switch and all that type of stuff, when in fact they're going to probably need a couple thousand, maybe 3,000 or 4,000, and you know, they'll manage just fine with those. That's to me the big thing here.
Well, let me ask this.
Excuse me, gentlemen, if you'll excuse me for a minute, let's get back to the very beginning when all this started. Why of all the places in the world did this come out of China? Now, let me say something to you, and this is my opinion of what I've been talking to people who I know from all over the world. They have said to me the same thing. Number one, the Chinese are no longer communists. They graduated from that a long time ago. Now they've taken the word fascism to a new height. These are the only people in the world that once told every single family in China you could only have one child per family. Even the Nazis, at the height of their reign, never came out with such a thing. Number two, the Chinese do not like the rest of the Western world. I believe that this was created in a laboratory, man-made, and it escaped, and this is why it's all over the world and going so incredibly fast. Never in the history of the world, even during World War I with influenza, did it ever spread like this, okay? That's number two. And number three, I believe in my heart of hearts that the Chinese are definitely responsible for this. Look what they're doing to their Chinese Muslims. They're basically speaking in concentration camps.
You know, you can only be Chinese by birth. Are you aware of that? They're very inclusive or exclusive society. You can't immigrate and become a Chinese citizen. Is that correct?
Yes, that's very true.
All right, now let's go one step further. You made the statement that the Chinese have abandoned communism. No, they haven't. They've used capitalism to remain in power as communists. They're two separate systems. Everybody mixes this up. Capitalism is an economic system. They were wise enough to understand that they had to feed 1 billion starving people to maintain control. So they adopted capitalism, ironically, during the Nixon years and Kissinger. Everybody forgets about that. In order to be able to sustain their power base. That's what it's all about.
They are ripe for a revolution. The people are very, very unhappy, and the government knows this. That's why we have now the coronavirus. This was to take care of the people, and it was to take care of the rest of the Western world and wreak havoc on our economy. But what they didn't realize, the same thing that the Japanese didn't realize during World War II, they're dealing with a sleeping giant that is now wide awake.
Namely?
Okay.
And that sleeping giant?
Is America.
Exactly.
We've really, what's happening?
Well, you know, at very least, whether Avram is right, whether they it was, I mean, I'm not sure that the information's there that it, you know, was created in the lab. I've heard other things that it wasn't created in the lab, but yet on the other hand, there are some that circumstantial evidence that the lab was right near where it first started. So, okay, that's up for debate. But what isn't really up for debate is that the Chinese hid this from the world, and their data, I thought I read something where the data just doesn't make sense. In other words, the number of cases compared to the number of deaths, they have a very high number of deaths to the number of so-called cases. So something's not right with their data. And clearly they did hide this from the world. And so for that, and even the World Health Organization, there's another one for you to go off on, Joe. Their head has been coming under, the head of the World Health Organization, for not being more proactive on this, has come under fire as well.
Well, they're on the payroll. I mean, the head of the World Health Organization, I don't even believe he's a physician, is he?
No, he's not.
So here he is, and he's in the pocket of the chat. Listen. We just have it locally. We have a professor that was head of the chemistry department at Harvard who was in cahoots with the university from which this virus came from. Is that
absolutely
correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. He should be thrown in. He should be thrown in jail.
Well, he hasn't been. And actually, they're trying to make excuses for him. So, I mean, where is the media? Do you think that MSNBC or CNN is, or the Washington Post or the New York Times are giving truth to the American people? Paul, you made a great point. The media is complicit. And all I hear about is that Trump's got blood on his hands. For what? Trump didn't create this virus, did he? I mean, and who are the people who are covering up and not talking about it? And it's the mainstream media, which is why, you know, the Fab Four, and frankly speaking, and MSO Sports, tries to let people know the truth, let you think about it. Most of it's logical. Most of it can be deduced from information. And China is a bad actor. That simple.
What do you do when you want to get people's minds off of what they're thinking about? You start a war.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay.
Carbon enemy. Yeah, exactly.
Paul, do you want to weigh in on that? Are you still there?
Paul has to go in and out.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's fine. I get that. All right.
But you talked about beaches, Billy. I wanted to just run down that a little bit because I take my dog down to.
Hey Joe, before you talk about beaches, let me just finish up one more thought on China. And I heard this the other day too, is that while we were being told, you know, that or not being told anything about the coronavirus, China was buying up millions and millions of units of PPE in January, knowing what they knew for a month.
Yeah, now, why don't you define PPE for our audience, because they probably don't know what it means.
Personal protective equipment. So that would be face masks, probably gloves, shields, all of that stuff, sanitizer, those kinds of things.
Yeah. All that type of stuff, right?
Yep.
As a protective measure for first responders, basically, correct?
Yeah.
Not the general public.
All right, so now, Joe, we'll jump to your dog on the beach story, but I really have to say that, to me, Massachusetts has been right on top of this with the mitigation response. To me, I think, you know, can you quibble with a few things? Maybe, but it seems to me that Massachusetts has been quick to respond and strong to respond.
My problem is not with that. I tend to agree with you. My problem is why did the MDC shut off parking along Lynn Shore Drive? It makes no sense to me. I mean, you drive down the Lynn Shore Drive, you park your car, you distance yourself from everybody, and you don't get cabin fever. You allow your dog to run around a little bit. You walk a little bit, stay away from people. I mean, it takes the pressure off. You get what I'm trying to say?
Well, if that was done according to the way that you operate, that would be fine. But most people don't think along those lines, and they're very stupid, okay? So that's why they had to do what they had to do. I am agreeing with that. But the thing that I still say is I would like to hold China accountable for what the hell is going on in the rest of the world, because there's no virus in the history of the world that ever operated like this.
Hey, can I just add that?
Yep, Paul, go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, so the whole thing with China, there's a couple of points I'd like to make. First of all, this notion that China is going to be our supplier of medical equipment and drugs and so forth, and that is somehow the right way to go, which is something that they decided 30 years ago that this is what we were going to do, is so wrong on so many levels. It's a national security issue that we have to rely on the biggest enemy of the world, which
Absolutely.
Is China, to provide us with the resources we need to keep our citizenry healthy. And that's one thing. The second thing is, how is the media going to ever survive? I mean, they end up surviving. They're like cockroaches. But how are they ever going to survive by continuing to spew that this globalism argument and open borders argument and all that type of stuff after this is over? They just can't. And the last thing I want to say on this is that as a result of all of this, we need to be bringing all of that We need to become not just energy independent. We need to become production independent in as we move forward, and that will spur our economy for the next 30 years.
Very good point, Paul. But as Joe talked about yesterday, when we were talking privately, the 3M Corporation has all their masks made in China. They got to stop doing these kind of things.
By the way, I want to go one step further with what Paul said, because let's throw some actual figures on there. 95% of our antibiotics are produced in China. Insulin, all of that type of stuff that we're dependent upon. They shut off our supply, and they threatened to do it, by the way, of drugs, and we got real problems. You know, we do not produce pharmaceuticals in this country. Does anybody understand that? That's crazy. That's insane. Paul, you make a great point. And it goes beyond that. 3M that you mentioned, Avram, a Minnesota company, correct?
Yes.
They make the N95 mask.
Yes,
no, they don't. They're made in China.
Well, the
Chinese held everybody up on those masks. In fact, they shipped a whole bunch of them to Pakistan that were defective.
But hear me out. If they weren't responsible for this, why would they allow us to buy 1 million masks from them? They would say, no, we may need them for our own people. They don't care.
Hey, let me just stop you guys just for a second here to re-identify everybody in case they've clicked on to Lynn TV watching this and hearing the audio but not seeing those beautiful faces of Joe Spina, Paul Crowley, and Avram Lapidus. Well, maybe I shouldn't have included Joe in that thing, but not seeing Joe, let's put it that way. But anyways, we're doing a podcast. I'm Bill Newell with MSONewsSports.com. So it's on both places. So we've got this. We got the Fab Four here. We've recruited this team, so they're sounding off on the issues of the day. So obviously, every news story is coronavirus. We're trying to tie it in from time to time with things happening locally here. But Joe, I'll go back to you. I think you were just about to jump in.
Well, actually, because
you're always about to jump in. That's why, yeah.
That's true. And also, speak for yourself when you talk about beauty. Anyways. I think we should move on to something that people should be thinking about. And I think Andrew Cuomo has done a magnificent job, and I don't agree with him politically. And I think that he's going to be pressuring Biden to be the VP. And that is going to cause a great deal of problems with the feminists in this country, because Biden has pledged to choose a female as his running mate. And I noted yesterday that a nurse who represents New York City has come out strongly against Governor Cuomo, saying that he has been anything but effective during this coronavirus. So those are like the little carrying calls, belling the cat, where they don't like the idea that Cuomo is now emerging as a potential contender for the presidency, or more importantly, the vice presidency. Comments from anybody on that theory?
But before you guys comment, let me just frame this too. So we're now moving into the politics realm of this with Joe Biden, the nominee. They're talking about maybe a virtual Democratic convention. Joe's just introduced Governor Cuomo. And let me just throw one more piece into this. Will Joe Biden actually be the nominee? Is there any other way that could not happen at this point? But guys, take it from Joe's lead, if you will, it's all now politics or national politics then.
Okay, so I'll just say that if somebody better remember to wake up Joe Biden and tell him when the convention is and make sure they get him there, because he'll probably forget.
But Paul, wait a minute. He could do the convention from his basement, couldn't he now?
He'd still forget that, too. He pops into his hand. I mean, the guy is just like he's not all there. And I don't want to bother or be chastising somebody who has some health issues. But I don't want him my president either. So got to say that. And then the other thing is, Joe pointed out that he's going to have, if he goes with Cuomo as his vice president, he's going to have to deal with the feminists or whatever. Joe Biden, the Democrats, the national media, they have the benefit of let's call it media Alzheimer's. They forget everything that they've ever said. And so if he said, I'm going to have a woman and count on it, it doesn't mean anything because he's just going to do what he's going to do. They never do what they say they're going to do, and I don't see this as being any different. He said that at the time because it was important to get the votes, and that was it.
Andrew Cuomo doesn't stand a chance in hell to be Biden's choice if he does get the nomination. But let me ask you something. Why is it, of all the hot spots in the whole entire country, that New York has suffered the greatest amount of losses? Why is that? Simply because, with open borders, New York is the only state in the country that has actual enclaves. They have all over the state what we have here just in the city of Lynn, okay?
Well, it's also the center of the universe, too.
In some ways. But I want to tie in the earlier topic with Joe Biden. Joe Biden was the point man for China, was he not, under the Obama administration?
No question about it.
And did his son walk away with $1.5 billion from a Chinese bank or entity?
No question
about
it.
He's going in his pocket, but yes, he got to manage the money.
So why would we, the United States, be so foolish as to elect a man who fundamentally is in China's back pocket?
Because most people
you want to talk about the Manchurian candidate, which Joe Biden is the Manchurian candidate. I'm waiting for responses.
It's either everybody or nobody. Yeah, there's a lot to that, and what's really interesting is, you know, we talked about this, or maybe we touched on it a little bit earlier, and that is that the liberal left, the Dems, the media, they seem to be because it's so important to go after a bad man with the orange face, that China is good, they're trying, they spin everything to essentially make China look good so that it will make Trump look bad. And I think that's going to blow up in their face, frankly, but it's pretty scary to think that if Trump were no longer the president and we had anybody, most notably Biden, but anybody on the Democrat side, we would have these issues like globalism, open borders, all that stuff would come back, and it would just make it that much easier for these things to cause us trouble down the road.
If we didn't have open borders, what's going on in greater New York right now, the whole state, would be cut by 80%. Okay?
Well, it seems to me, though, Avrin, though, that one thing New York State didn't do, or New York City definitely did not do, is mitigate, like Massachusetts mitigated, like California mitigated, like Washington State mitigated. They didn't do it. They had Mayor de Blasio telling people to come on out. Come out to the city, you know, do stuff. I mean,
they actually had the Department of Public Health, the head of the Department of Public Health, going down to a festival in Chinatown and was trying to get people to show up to strengthen the numbers. You know,
Nancy Pelosi did that.
Nothing to worry about.
Yeah, I mean.
By the way, this word mitigate troubles me. Mitigate reminds me of an ostrich. You know, the ostrich mitigates by burying its head in the sand. The fact that we're separating from each other, I am deathly afraid to go out. I'm in my driveway in my car talking to you folks for fear of going to places where there's human beings.
Okay. Very good point. But the sadness here is, do you think this is going to just stop tomorrow? Even if they were to guarantee you it's all over, no one's going to go back to a normal life for quite some time.
But Joe, you staying in is good news for Lynn. I think.
probably
Joe. Just remember that.
What would you say, Paul?
You're saving money, Joe.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. I have a few. Which, by the way, this is an aside. My daughter made a great point. Why is it that the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is allowing lottery scratch tickets to be sold during this time? Exactly. So is the government interested in the well-being of its citizens? It wants us to mitigate and stay isolated, and yet it puts out all of these. I mean, Paul, I drove by the place up by where they sell the narcotics, the stuff like that. Yeah,
Hold on 1 second, Avron. Let's have Joe finish, and then you pop in there.
Joe, go ahead.
Joe,
stop the lottery. You cannot buy lottery tickets or any game tickets there.
Really?
Yes.
But I mean, why would the state? Did they shut down that marijuana place on Highland Avenue?
I don't know, but they don't assume that marijuana for recreation is an important thing. To be quite frank, at this time of our life, it's the most important thing, okay?
I never realized how many people participated in that particular activity. I drove by one day, and there was a line around the block waiting to get in there. I mean, you know, maybe since then they shut it down, but they were flocking in there. What about
the announcement that... Joe, that was the day before they made an announcement like on a Monday, and they said Tuesday at noon, all non-essential businesses need to shut their doors. So all the donors ran to the marijuana place before they closed. That's what that was all about.
Yeah.
Well, why are package stores open? Are they essential?
What kind of stores?
Package stores, liquor stores. Yeah, are they essential?
I think that's a very valid point. I think if you're going to have one, you're going to have the other. Especially when you think about the argument for recreational marijuana was in large measure there was always a comparison to alcohol as being a recreational type of thing, if you will. And so they could compare it to it to get it, you know, legal or whatever. And now they're drawing a huge distinction between the two.
I want to ask you, Billy, a question. You know, you talk about mitigation and restoration. Do you think there's any chance that Ron Emanuel, who famously said never let a crisis be wasted, or something to that effect, do you think that there are forces in our society and in the global community who are using this coronavirus in order to gain control of society and individuals?
Yeah, I don't know, Joe. I mean, I think you have. I mean, you could have similar interests, but not connected as you're describing. In other words, the people that hate Donald Trump, you know, will use this to hate Donald Trump. You know, what's interesting? We'll go into the. We're talking about the drugs a little bit later on, but you know, so I don't know whether that's. I think that it.
Sure, Bill Gates. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about individuals who like the World Health Organization, who like the United Nations, who want to subjugate American sovereignty to international order, which is exactly what Trump is supposed to, and that those individuals, the globalists, quote unquote, who are going to take this opportunity to control the masses. That's what I'm talking about. On 1984, Huxley, One World Society, and all that type of stuff, Cecil Rhodes. Is that conspiratorial? Is that just a figment of some type of screenwriter? Or, speaking to you, Avril, or is it a reality?
Well, the thing of it is, what has this virus done? It has isolated America from the rest of the world. No one can come here, and no one can go on from here. Our economy, which will come back someday, as Paul once said, it will definitely come back someday. There's no question about that. But right now, it's wreaking havoc. During the Great Depression, unemployment was over 20%. Now it's approaching 10%. There are more people that will never be able to go back to work ever again. See, people aren't paying attention to the really important things. People are talking about masks and ventilators and this and that. And that's, of course, very important. But the big picture is how many people's lives have been destroyed, whether they get the virus or don't get the virus, as to what's happening right now.
That's right, my point. Is that by design? Paul, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the economic impact, you know, it may not be directly considered a health issue, but it is. It indirectly affects people's health, you know, and in a significant way. And when you know, this is the time when, you know, tough decisions have to be made. And you know, the screaming liberals on the left would not allow President Trump to make a difficult decision if they could crucify him for it by just, you know, talking about the negative aspects of it. For example, when he was saying that we can't let the cure be worse than the problem, you know, everybody freaked out that he wanted to kill all the old people. But, you know, he had no basis. He wasn't listening to the science. He had no basis for saying that. The fact of the matter is, it's more likely that there will be significant, let me rephrase that. There's going to be more health hardship as a result of the economic stoppage than there will be from the virus.
That is the most serious thing that the virus created. Okay, it's ruined people's lives. They could never be restored ever again.
Just think about this. I haven't gone to a baseball game in years. Never really cared to in the past few years. I loved it as a kid and so forth. Basketball games, loved the Bruins, football. How can that ever be the same again? I mean, if you Fenway Park, you go there and you literally have to share airspace with the people you're sitting next to because the seats are so small. How is that ever going to be the same? I mean, they're going to have to, you know, cut the size of the people that they'll let in by a third in order to keep 6 foot distancing.
Yeah.
And make no mistake, while it may not become the rule that you must be 6 feet apart, people are going to behave that way.
Hey, let me.
Many years to come, Paul.
Let me just jump in. We have a bunch of topics. We're at the end. We're going to talk about maybe the roadmap to the economic return. So. We're going to touch on that at the end of here for make sure we allow some time for that. And that, Paul, goes into what you're talking about in some part, what could happen with sports and so on and venues like that. Let me ask you this question here, though. We talk about whatever Trump says, the media will go the other way. What about these news conferences the president is having? What is the impact of these on the country? You know, and I kind of monitor things when I can from time to time. You know, you have Fox News covering them from start to finish. They are long. I mean, they're probably a little bit too long. But then you have CNN and MSNBC jumping out of them or not jumping into them and so on. And then spinning about them while they continue to go on when you're having the medical experts on, like the one on Monday evening, whether, you know, they're missing out on Dr. Birx. They're missing out on Dr. Fauci because they want to spin it. What's your take on this, and what's the impact of these news conferences to the public? Governors are having them all around the country. They appear to be very much followed by the public, but you have the networks or some of them not covering them.
It's very comforting for most people that Donald Trump talks on TV every single night. He gives them a ray of hope.
Why isn't that as poo-pooed by the MSNBC, CNN, and the mainstream media? I mean, they have vilified. They have
because
nothing good to say.
It improves his rating.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
so why does it improve his? But why does it improve his ratings, Paul?
Because
everything they've said about Donald Trump. Everything they say about Donald Trump, the people are seeing him unvarnished. And they find out one thing about Donald Trump that nobody wants to admit to. He doesn't like to kill people. He values human life. Truly values. He agonizes over death. He hates having to talk about people dying of this virus. All he's interested in is mitigating, using your word, Bill Newell, of mitigating the amount of deaths that are going to take place as a consequence of a virus to which he had no control and wasn't complicit in at all. All he's trying to do is save American lives, and for that matter, world lives, because if you remember correctly, he wants to produce a whole bunch of ventilators in order to give them to other countries. Am I correct on that one?
He has taught some of the most major corporations that for years people thought had no heart, didn't care about anybody else but themselves, to do and help the rest of the world, okay? He's done that. Number two, if you take a look at his face very clearly, the man is beyond exhausted. He is absolutely, unbelievably upset about what happened.
That's right.
By the way, Paul, I'm waiting for your response. Joe asked you a question, then answered it for you, but maybe you have some time now to get to his question.
Yes, but by the way, Bill.
Joe, let him answer the question. Come on.
No, wait a minute. Billy, let me ask you this. Isn't that what the mainstream media does? Ask a question to answer their own question. Don't they do that all the time? I'm just using their technique. Period. I'm sorry, Billy. Answer the question.
Is it for me? I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. Go ahead.
I just want to comment on Donald Trump and the press conferences and all that kind of stuff. You know, the guy, to your point, Joe, he really does care. I wasn't sold on him in the beginning. You know that, Joe. I kind of grew to like the guy. Not because of his persona. His persona is not my cup of tea. I never really appreciated the guy, even long before he was running for president and so forth. That being said, if you asked me who I would want to deal with such a crisis as the pandemic, and you went through the, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama, I will tell you that hands down, Donald Trump is the guy I would want. And the reason for it is because he's pragmatic. He is not going to let the lamestream media influence how he is going to do what needs to be done. Unlike, Benghazi, where it was in the middle of an election and they spent all their time spinning Benghazi as best they could so that it wouldn't be a political issue for them. Donald Trump is going to get reelected or not based on him dealing with the matters at hand head on and doing the best damn job of leading this country through a very difficult time.
If there's any one group of people who are more upset about this virus right now, it's the Democratic Party.
Yeah, it's screwing them up pretty good. Because Donald Trump continues to prove his leadership ability.
And hey, as I say, every night about 5 o'clock or 5:30, he gets on TV. It's like you call the doctor to come over your house and to reassure you that you're going to eventually be all right, and the people love it.
But how impressive really are Dr. Fauci and Dr. Deborah Birx in explaining things and reassuring people? And I won't say the word frightening, but certainly encourage people to distance and wash hands and do all those things that we've been asked to do for weeks now.
They do both seem to be very capable and professional and calming at the same time. I agree with that. There are some news sites that are trying to, point out that they're just part of the liberal left too, and that may be true. But when you get a situation like this, you have to put politics aside and. They seem to be okay with that. And, I don't think either one of them has great love for Donald Trump. But at the same time, he is the leader, and they need to help him do the things that need to be done. And I would not be surprised if after all this is over, that the two of them who are card-carrying members of the Obama coalition didn't believe that Donald Trump was the right man for the job at the right time.
Hey, yeah, you know what people normally think Donald Trump would do for his team of people to address the coronavirus? Maybe bring in a guy like Don Rickles. Can you imagine Don Rickles and Donald Trump at the press conference handling this stuff? That's what they would portray him to be.
Excuse me, yes, I really can see Don, because we all need a big laugh.
I got to tell you, I've referred to Donald Trump as the Don Rickles. Of presidents in the past. I mean, you don't even need Don Rickles. He's already doing it for you. The way he cuts up those he disagrees with, he nailed John Cowell yesterday on Monday on the news for asking a silly question. He even went after a Fox News reporter the day before, maybe even the same day. And he if he has any reason to believe that you're that there's pettiness associated with your question, he's going to lambaste you like you're the guy in the bald-headed guy in the front of a comedy show getting heckling.
If I may intercede with just one brand new question, what do you think about this new stimulus package? Because as far as I'm concerned, it's nowhere near enough.
Well, I can just add that as a business consultant, I've been doing a lot of work with some clients to help them get those loans that are forgivable. And so I've been talking to, I have 28 clients that I've been working with, and I'm going to tell you, to a person, every one of them is in one way or another being devastated as a you know, family, a business. They're worried about their employees. It is a devastating thing. But this program provides an 8-week pause in the system. And if so, we get them their money. They get to hire their employees back for 8 weeks without having to have revenue to back it up. And then hopefully by the time 8 weeks is up, we're turning the corner.
Okay.
This is going to be huge if 8 weeks is all that is needed before we can start ramping business back up.
It's going to be a lot longer than 8 weeks, but hear me out. The stimulus package right now in the short run is very good, but in the long run, it is definitely not enough.
Well, it's if you ask me, it's too much because we're up to $25 trillion in debt, and, eventually, it's going to be too much. I mean, I always thought $8 trillion was too much. Now we're up to $25 trillion. So
a thought ran through my head, and it's way off in left field as usual, but I hear a lot of folks talking about let's leave it to the scientists. Do you hear that one? Let's leave it to the scientists, let them tell us what to do. But here's my problem with that. Frankenstein was a scientist, wasn't he?
So wasn't Dracula.
And Bill Nye the science guy.
Yeah. So my point being is scientists have created some really, really significant monsters, haven't they, including this virus.
I think the Nazis also had a few scientists working for them, too, I believe.
What was that?
I think the Nazis also had a few scientists working for them, I think.
Yeah, Dr. Mengele. So scientists are fundamentally dastardly people, right? All I care about is science, right?
Well, there might be a few, yeah.
Yeah, well,
scientists have always been accused of having a cold heart, and they do.
Well, I just got to, because this is airing on both places here. Joe, you can get away with that stuff maybe on Frankly Speaking, but I just want to make sure. I mean, there are so incredible doctors and scientists working on cures and stuff right now, vaccines, testing, and all this stuff. So we got to be careful what we say here, Joe. But go ahead. I know where you're going.
Going after the science, I agree with you, Bill. I mean, going after the scientists, en masse, I don't think is fair. And I will say this, though. Scientists are scientists. And from a leader's perspective, I've had to lead an organization in my own world, so I understand these kinds of things. It's not about anything other than using this. The scientists need to help you to come to the right decision from a leadership perspective. And relying on scientists is important. But it's not...
Wait a minute. You all missed the point. The point is that you're absolutely right. Science is important and does marvelous things. But it also has a flip side. So you have to balance the two. We're putting all our eggs in a basket that may not necessarily be in our best interest. That's all I'm saying.
That's exactly right.
But we're not. Donald Trump is not.
Yes.
The media insists that he do it, but he's not.
Well, I mean, the parallel here would be considering, we have a military, but our...
The question is, should we not question scientists?
Well, of course.
We don't necessarily question... Well... But Paul is saying, though, you use the scientists to form your policy, but you're the policymaker.
Well, that scientist Ptolemy said that the Earth was the center of the universe. He was a scientist. Was he right?
I think he was, wasn't he, Joe?
No, he wasn't. neither was Copernicus. He was half right. But the point simply being is scientists make errors.
But even if they...
Well, that's why they call it science.
And all the modeling that they've done on the coronavirus has all been greatly overblown.
But hear me out for one second. I'll just talk for 1 minute and I'll shut up. What I don't think anybody understands and why I think I understand is because this is never going to bring back America to a normal society again for many years. That's
Precisely. What created it? Did science create this issue?
Basically, yes. And as I still say, and you can hold me accountable, I still believe this is a man-made virus. Because never in the history of the world has anything spread like a wild forest fire like they have in California.
In 2015...
Well, but I have to say this is pretty efficient if you wanted to exercise euthanasia, for sure.
The
Chinese have no respect for the Western world. We are their enemy. And it's because of when Trump called it on it and said it publicly, they couldn't believe what they had just heard. Because now, had he not said it worldwide publicly, but now their own people, who don't like them in the first place, are saying, well, look what the rest of the world says. Now, what happened in Hong Kong? Why did the Chinese not go in there and mass shoot thousands upon tens of thousands of people? Because now they're on the world stage. So the only way they can calm everybody down is by making a virus, and that's what the hell they did, and I'll take that to my friggin' grave.
But if...
I'm accountable. They declared war on us without declaring war.
I want to get back to 2015, rather, when Bill Gates stated categorically that it won't be missiles, it'll be microbes that's going to be the big problem downstream. And that is exactly what's taking place. Our enemy, wars in the future, aren't going to be missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles. They're going to be microbes coming out of laboratories. Exactly what you said, Avram. And this is what's happening now. And we do not have a defense plan or war games about biological warfare, which is
there is a newspaper in Sweden which actually said the doctor, who they say was the first person to die of a medical profession from the corona disease in China, they killed him. Because he was going to tell the rest of the world what the hell they did. This escaped the laboratory.
But this exercise that we've been going through, while it's been something of a learning process for everybody, it's been kind of a war game of its own, right? And, you know, just think that what's going to come out of this, and it's going to be a much more sophisticated version of getting under the desk during a air raid fallout during the Cold War. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. Everybody's going to be, you know, taught how to deal with this invisible enemy, much like the way we tried to deal with, you know, the threat of a nuclear bomb. Tied under the desk was the solution back then. That wasn't a very good one, but nevertheless, we're going to be having that same kind of thing going forward. You know, they're going to say, there's going to be like, DEFCON 1 through 5, right? DEFCON 1 is going to be when everybody has to shelter in place, and DEFCON 5 is when is the normal situation, and everybody needs to practice social distancing as best as they can. Frankly, when I go into the restroom, I've been practicing social distancing for my entire life. If there's seven urinals and somebody's at urinal number 2, I go to urinal number 6. You know, I've always
been practicing that.
I walk into a men's room, and there's someone in there. I say, I'll see you later.
You know, 50 years ago, I read a book, or maybe longer, by Michael Creighton called The Andromeda Strain.
Oh, God, yes. Michael Creighton is one of the greatest American minds in the history of the world.
So you recall that book?
Yes, I certainly do.
I wrote a book report on it in high school.
My point, isn't this exactly what he was talking about? Remember? Exactly what we're talking about today, Michael Creighton wrote about 50 years ago, or more.
I'm almost assured that when this comes to some kind of a peaceful equal Ibrahim plane, that Donald Trump, who actually was calling it the Chinese virus, and they told him, don't do that, he said it right. This is the Chinese virus.
Hey, guys, I want to let you guys know our time is running down here. But and I thought, can we maybe focus back to this last question here would be how do we get things back to normal or begin that process? I'll take Avram's point that we may never get back to the way it was before. I understand that piece. But what are the first steps that we should be looking for about trying to get back to normal? And I'll watch the clock while you guys talk.
Go ahead, Paul.
So I think that the best way to deal with this once we get out of it is to recognize that the social distancing concept is an important element of society from here until eternity. And I'm not saying you have to wear a mask or that you have to do these things, but people are going to have to figure out, I mean, that's step one, and then you build around that. And building around that would be, you know, having a, I mean, if you go to the Walmarts now, they have only one entrance and, you know, tape marked off 6 feet. That's not going to be necessary, I don't believe. But I think that we slowly have to go back to things. And people who lived it understand the six-foot rules and really need to do everything they can to protect against it. Frankly, as an individual, I need to get used to the fact that people are looking at me differently now. I mean, I don't know if any of you have experienced this, but I do it myself. I go up, I talk to somebody, and I almost take a step back, and I'm apprehensive. I'm leery. I need to get used to the fact that they don't think I'm a leper, but they just want to make sure I'm not, you know?
Yeah.
And we have that to deal with going forward.
Joe, we're really down to just about a little over a minute.
Well, simply put, as soon as we build up antibodies and we become immune to it, that's it. That's the key. The key is whether it becomes irrelevant insofar as that our bodies are not affected by it, and that's going to happen.
I have been told from my friend, as I said, who runs the lab at the Brigham Women's Hospital, probably within 1 year from now, there'll be a vaccine just like they have for flu. But what is the major tragedy that's going to come from all this when the dust settles is people that went to work every single day, where the bread and butter of our society will never be able to get back to their lives as it was before. That's the tragedy. This is more than a disease that kills people. This is a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree.
Amen.
Well, again, the economic impact, we'll be learning more about that in the days ahead, and I just wanted to reset everything that I'm Bill Newell with MSONewsSports.com, but the other group, the other voices that you're hearing are from Joe Spina's Frankly Speaking on Lynn TV with Joe, Paul Crowley, and Avram Lapidus, which are there every Thursday live at 5. But again, and while we are they're on hiatus because they have to social distance, which is not a bad thing, by the way. These guys will be. Hopefully, we can do this again next week as well. And
with some of the girls I used to go out with, I got no problem with social distancing.
All right, there's the final word, Avram Lapidus. I'm Bill Newell again with Joe Spina, Paul Crowley here on MSO News Sports.